The thing's on. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I call the September 17, 2019 regular board meeting of Glencoe Park District to order. Lisa, please call the roll and note the time.
7:01. Commissioner Boren?
Yes.
Commissioner Colby?
Yes.
Commissioner Lennon?
Yes.
Commissioner Underdunk?
Yes.
President Brooks?
Yes. Okay, consent agenda items A through C are routine. Can we get a recommended motion? Does any commissioner want any item pulled from the consent agenda items?
No.
No? Okay, I entertain a motion to approve the consent agenda items as presented.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, roll call vote, please.
Commissioner Boren?
Yes.
Commissioner Colby?
Yes.
Commissioner Lawton?
Yes.
Commissioner Underdunk?
Yes.
President Brooks?
Yes, motion passed. It's our practice not to address questions at this time. However, we will take comments under advisement from the public. Please limit comments to 3 minutes per person. And if you're here to speak about the Independence Day fireworks or sale of Linden House, we have included another matters from the public after the staff presentation and board discussion. So if your comments are related to those two topics, there will be another time that you can speak to us after we've made the presentation. Is that clear? Or you can speak next. Entirely up to you. Would you like to speak to the commissioners?
Yeah, I really wanted just to speak to the concept of moving the July 4th fireworks to July 3rd.
Okay. If you'd like to do that now, you don't have to sit through any more of it, and you'd like to make your comments now, that's perfectly fine.
Sure.
If you wouldn't mind just stating your name and telling us. Okay, thank you.
My name is Bob Reichblatt. I live at 1215 Hopewell Road, and I've lived in Glencoe for approximately 21 years. Before we moved to Glencoe, we lived in Wilmette, where the fireworks were on July 3rd. So I've had the opportunity of both having July 3rd, July 4th fireworks. I prefer July 4th. I think this year, the problem with the fireworks was more with the food trucks that were placed along one of the prime viewing areas, which is generally park, and the lights never went off, and it was just a debacle, so to speak. The problem I see with even the thought of moving it to the 3rd is part of it is premised on the fact that we may be able to get a barge. Apparently, we don't know if we'll get a barge. If I recall correctly, when we lost the barge on July 4th, it was because there's only one barge that the Corps of Engineers said could shoot off fireworks for the holiday, any holiday, and that was already taken. It's probably still there for July 4th. But since other places have been doing July 3rd fireworks for a while, then we know that it's even feasible to get the barge. If it's not, then you still run into the problem of having to be closed. The other problem with July 3rd fireworks is, and I'm now retired, but when I worked, often July 3rd is a work day. And if you've got a family and you're planning on going to fireworks to come home from downtown and then come over to see fireworks, it is an issue. And if the theory was, well, you'll get a space on the beach, I remember even on July 4th, the beach often closed, so there wasn't any place to sit on the beach, even if you weren't working on July 4th. Now, compound that on July 3rd, it's going to be just, I think, worse. Anyway, so that's my comments. I think July 4th fireworks, it works. It's a proper place. We've done it for 20 years. You know, would I like a better view of the fireworks without whacking down the trees? Sure, but even when that was the same problem. You don't necessarily get a better view, you know, on the beach again unless you have the barge and it's unobstructed. One solution might be, I think the Park District Code controls the space to the left of the water treatment plant, because remember that came up during the discussion of moving the water treatment plant. If it does, why don't we just shoot the fireworks off from that area to the left of the water treatment plant, if that's Park District land, I think it is, then people could still be on the beach. I mean, like you're blocking the water treatment plant, but it's not very high. And that way you accomplish the same goal. You can keep the beach open and just run the fireworks in that area. For example, I think when that runs their fireworks now off where the dog beach is. on the further side. So it's just a matter of moving it. You still have your beach open. You don't have the expense of barge. You can do it on July 4th.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, would anyone else like to make comments now? Come on up, Hillary.
Can I have to stand up?
Yeah, you do, and you have to state your name.
My name is Hillary Queen, and I got to be over there when we decided before about the 4th of July. And I was adamant about having it on the 4th, and I still am. I think the 4th of July, and I think most people in Blanco will agree, it's the nicest day in all of Blanco. It's like Mayberry from start to finish, and I think we should still finish with the fireworks. And you guys know as well as I do that most of the people that are on the beach that won't be able to use the beach on the 4th of July are non-residents, because everybody else that are residents are doing the race, the games, the parade, the picnics, and then we all come to the fireworks. And I think it's fabulous. I mean, I've lived in Blanco my entire life. When I was a kid, we sat up on top, we watched fireworks from the top, then we went to the beach, which was great. And, you know, it doesn't work that well anymore. And, you know, I don't know what the barge situation is, but I also know with the barge, if it's too rough, it can't come, and then we're going to need stomp anyways. Anyways, and I was there for the time when the barge never made it. And anybody that was there still remembers that.
Yeah, I was there.
So I just wanted to, you know, tell you how I felt, even though I know you guys all know how I feel. But I would hate to see such a wonderful day in Blanco stop short of having the fireworks. And I also like when he goes in them, and you know, I don't know if it's a nice option, but it's the best day in Blanco. Don't mess with it. Good to see you.
Thank you, Hillary.
You too.
Okay, any other comments for this phase of things? Okay, very good. So, let's lead the discussion, Lisa.
All right.
On the 4th of July fireworks.
All right. Let me give a little bit of background. Glenco Beach was used as a viewing area for Independence Day fireworks prior to the change in 2014. And so 2014, we were informed that barge was no longer an option on July 4th. At that time, we did a community survey with one question: which day should the Independence fireworks take place in Glenco? 276 people responded to the survey, with 59.78 favoring fireworks on July 4th. After considering alternates, as she has said, they voted to close the beach and have the fireworks where they are. The fireworks are launched off a barge that is about
1,500 feet.
Thank you, 1,500 feet away, and the fireworks off the beach are 350 feet away. So then, through the years, over the last 5 years, we've had people continue to come up and say, why is the beach closed? We want the beach. And this is residents and non-residents. We enjoy that tradition. So we were asked by the Lakefront Advisory Committee, is there any way to get a barge? And so Bobby, being new to the district since this decision was made, went, called up the fireworks company and says, is there any change in the barge situation since we asked 5 years ago? At that time, he said, there's no change to July 4th. There is still only two barges available in Lake Michigan. So the gentleman is correct. One, they don't know where it is. And one is definitely tied up on the 4th of July. It will never be available on the 4th of July from what they said. I guess never, maybe if you offered $1 million, but never available. So they said, but it may be available July 3rd or July 5th. So that's when we brought the question to the board and said, should we explore the July 3rd option? We kind of dismissed July 5th. We did not want it after the fact, should we explore that again? Board was kind of like, oh boy, this is a good question. Let's do a survey similar to what the last board did. So we did. So we put out, let me move back a little bit. So we contacted the barge company and said, could you guarantee that we get the barge next year? And when do we have to make that decision by? Have to make the decision by the end of the month to guarantee it for fireworks next year. And the cost is about $13,000. They will not enter into a long-term contract, which means 2 or 3 years. But they said, it may be available.
They don't see any reason why it wouldn't be available.
Right, but no contract would be signed. So just to let you know.
Okay.
So that brings us to here. So we decided to do the survey, and Aaron can give a little bit the verbal feedback of what happened at the survey.
Yeah, so we sent out the survey, and so did the Village of Glencoe, the Public Library, District 35, and plus there was a story in the Glencoe Anchor, and links were on all those pages, plus it was on social media. 546 people responded. We did restrict answering it by IP address, but it's not scientific. Of that, we had 54% say July 3rd, 45% say July 4th. There were a lot of comments. I know you guys got them. Some comments asked for other options, like fireworks from the beach on July 3rd, so close to beach July 3rd. Others suggested other locations or just getting a barge on July 4th. We did ask if anyone would donate. 65% said no. I think one of the biggest trends in there was the word tradition, whether it was the tradition of having fireworks on July 4th or the tradition of being on Glencoe Beach. I also thought it was interesting, 30% of the commenters were concerned about cost, and 37% wanted to keep the beach open.
So going back to financials, if we opened the beach, there would be some revenue generated, but that's really subjective to the weather. If we have bad weather, we have high surf, we have the high bacteria, that could all affect the revenue that we generate. So this really is not a financial decision, except that we would have to pay another $13,000 for the barge. Keep that in mind. Staffing would be about the same, except for the fact that on July 4th we have staffing from 6:30 a.m. to 10 p.m. that man six locations to make sure people don't go down to the bluff where the fireworks are. Those would be eliminated, but then we'd have staffing on the beach. To answer the gentleman's question of why don't we just move it to the boating beach, because that's a good, fair question, and it was looked at last time. The residents by the boating beach are much closer, so it would not meet the firework safety zone, so that would not be possible. So the only location we can shoot it off in that area is the middle or closer to the pier, actually the middle of our swimming beach. It meets the safety zones as far as residents that we have up there, so that would not be the case. So that's the only place we could shoot it off. Any questions? Kind of summarized it. All right, open to you for discussion.
Well, since you've all said the same, there's not a clear mandate. It'd be nice if there was. If it was like 80% that said yes, that's a little bit easier to make that decision, but that's not what we're dealing with. To the point of the workday situation, we could go either way on that because a lot of people are, you know, you're up late the 4th and then they have to go to work on the 5th and it's a camp day on the 5th. So the kids are normally exhausted and the parents too. So I can go either way on that because on the 3rd most people are off the 4th, you can sleep in, you know, so that's a hard, I think that's a trade-off. I don't see the harm in trying it since we're not signing a contract. There's no reason we couldn't go back to not doing it. So to me, it's not like a huge risk. 54%, it's still 9% more that wanted the beach open. So I don't know, it's a hard call. Like I said, I wish it were a clearer mandate. It's not. I want to represent what the community wants. And I can only go by what the numbers say.
Can I clarify what you mean by try it? We strongly recommend that if you switch the date, that we stay with that date for 5 years. It's so hard navigating communication of what day the fireworks are. People are finally, 5 years later, getting used to it on July, you know, that we're closing the beach. We still have people coming up with their sand chairs like, oh, the beach is closed? So it's really confusing to residents if we say, oh, we're going to move it to this day, and then next year change it to this day. So I think if the board should be prepared to make a decision, it should be a decision for at least 5 years. You know, have to, but it would be really hard to communicate to the residents if we're flip-flopping on dates. I don't know if you guys feel.
I agree with Stephanie on July 3rd versus July 4th. It is a toss-up. I know a lot of offices downtown close early on July 3rd. The trains They actually stopped running trains from downtown to Glencoe in the later evening because people take a 2 o'clock or a 3 o'clock or 4 o'clock train, and they have those express up here. So I think most of the, I think it's a 50-50 call. I know for one, with young kids, some of which have had, he was a gym teacher, I believe, who want to participate in a race at 8 a.m., they get up at 7 a.m., and then they're up until 10:30 p.m. for the fireworks, and it makes for a long day. So I see both sides, and I think to myself, you know what, this is America. We do July 4th, we do fireworks on July 4th. So I think it's a toss-up. From the numbers side, it's a 9-point gap, you're correct, but it is a 20% more respondents won it on July 3rd than July 4th. 20% is a big number. Can we share these numbers?
They're in the board packet, and we can put them up if you want to see them.
It's 300 people won it on July 3rd, and 245 won it on July 4th. So that's a 20% gap. It's a big enough gap for us to think about it. I like your idea of, do we do a 1 year of test and learn? I think the 4th of July that we celebrate here is mostly for the residents, and we welcome non-residents to come, and I think it's a great way to encourage non-residents to enjoy some of our beautiful facilities. But ultimately, I think we could probably communicate to the residents that this is a test and learn out there to see what it's like. There's a lot of feedback on the obstructed view. A lot of feedback on the obstructed view. So I think, I wish it were a slam dunk. I wish this was like a 90-10. But 20% more residents on July 3rd is a big enough number to make you think.
Dudley, what do you think?
So, like my colleagues, I don't have a strong preference one way or another as I do the balance sheet with the pluses and minuses. I do see the advantages of being down on the beach, and there's some disadvantages being down on the beach, which is physically getting down to the beach for some people. On the other hand, there is an added expense, and also kind of our attitude, how do we deal with uncertainty? You know, we have some uncertainties. Can we get a barge in the future? What about the weather on the beach or the beach being closed? You know, those kinds of things related to the finances. I do suggest that it would probably cost slightly more, but it is 4th of July and we want to have a celebration that people can see. That's another way of saying I don't have a strong particular preference one way or another. I'm fairly risk averse myself, you know, I come down very slightly on keeping it on the 4th, but I don't have a strong feeling about it.
Instead,
I'd like to do the 3rd, I'd be very happy with that. We had a wonderful experience this year with our family, and let's do it again.
Okay, thanks, Debbie. All righty, Josh, what you got?
Just because of the chase, I think I would come down with leaving it on the status quo. I appreciate the thoroughness of the packet and the survey and the comments that Stephanie and Michael have made. But in the end, I view it as this sounds kind of black and white, but it's more costly to do it on the 4th of the barge. On the 3rd of the barge. I'm certain there will be a lot of date confusion, both if we changed it and then if we had to change it back due to weather or the barge not being able to get here or availability of the barge. I think, to Dudley's point, there's a lot of uncertainty about the future availability of the barge. They may say, yeah, sure, it's available for 3 times the price 2 years from now, and then we have to switch it back. And that just feeds the data confusion. There could be 6-foot waves on Lake Michigan and the barge can't get here. And that wrecks the experience for everybody, for sure. And in the end, it's not a life or death situation. It's clearly not. So I would say, like, I would be more inclined to make the change if there were a really compelling reason to make a change, but on the whole, I see the advantages and disadvantages of both, but I would say the status quo.
May I add something?
Sure.
I do want to compliment staff in helping us take a look at this and bringing options forward to us. I really, really appreciate that, and it's a sign of a good organization that you're willing to look at additional options. I think that's terrific. So thank you, Gina.
Yes, sir.
Yes,
sir. Could I say something? Yes,
well, it's out of order, but Hillary, I think you can just go ahead and say it real quick.
The only thing I'd like to say from my years of experience
yes.
being over there is, I mean, you do surveys, and you do surveys for a reason, but we all know that people generally show up for something, either they want change or they don't like it. And also, because you sent the survey to so many different options, my guess is that a lot of people might have said the same thing in different surveys with different emails. You know, like when there's somebody against something, the room is full of the people that are against it, not the people that are for it.
It's not associated to email addresses, it's IP addresses in your home.
Right.
So you can use multiple devices, but it wouldn't be.
Or you could vote at work and vote at home.
Yeah.
It's not scientific.
It's not
scientific.
Twice.
But I'm just saying it's not.
In an either or situation, that. You know, you have it on both sides. You have the people who are, and looking clearly in this room, you see people who are strongly for one day, and that argument can be made that individuals voted multiple times for that one day. I don't think this is the most scientific of surveys, I will tell you that.
Mm-hmm.
I was surprised by a 20% gap between 248, 245, and 300. It's enough to make me think. But there are certainly, it's not a slam dunk, right? This isn't like a 90-10 at all. And that, I like what you said about this isn't a micro deck, this is a option.
Both good options.
Both good options, and I appreciate you say it on the,
okay,
on the change date. It's hard to change back and forth.
Okay, so what we have here is two for and two against, which really bums me out because I guess I have to weigh in. Now, I will say I was on the beach when the barge didn't show up, so I have personal experience with what that feels like with children and equipment and sitting in the sand and realizing, you know what, this just isn't happening. There was no announcement, of course. There was, this probably isn't going to happen. Everybody eventually realizes at 11 o'clock at night. Then you start the walk of shame up that winding path with everybody else. You know, I'm not going to discuss my personal experience with beach and the top. I will say that this July 4th, several of my adult kids were with us and their partners, and we went, and it was so much fun. And I think part of the problem is you guys do such a good job on July 4th, and you will continue to do that no matter where it is. So I did talk to you about staff morale, if they had a problem with being there on the 4th. There's no issue with that. I was trying to get some little reason to weigh one side or the other, and I just didn't have it, and so I left it to the commissioners to decide.
I'll say, if you're very indicative of what's happening in the community, so it's not surprising that.
And it's really why we put the survey out.
Yeah.
We couldn't decide because the pros and cons both ways. So. Here's the thing. I am also risk-averse, and I don't like to spend money, and I think there is a much larger inherent risk in having a barge for many reasons. The issue is we sent a survey out, and 20% more respondents voted for the third. So I think if we bothered to put out the survey, if we reject the results of the survey, it seems foolish to even survey people. So, based on the survey, I have to say we need to give this July 3rd a chance. I am not feeling like we have to do it for 5 years, but we'll discuss that next year. I understand your point, but let's see how it goes this next year. And, you know, I think the people have spoken, and this is what we're acting for them. Oh, and I want to say one more thing.
There was a comment, it's comment 103, it was just so sweet, I'm just going to read it off. They talked about what they wanted, and then they said off topic. This was very sweet. Just a suggestion, I will read it. Remind our Glencoe neighbors to say hi or even smile to each other when walking down the street or in town. No one looks up to say hi anymore if you don't know each other, even when you are 1 foot away from each other on the sidewalks. Just a thought. So I thought it was a really sweet reminder to me when I'm walking down the sidewalk, we're all a very small community, say hi, acknowledge the person walking next to you, and I just thought it was a sweet thing to say. So
it's hard to see you when I'm looking at my phone.
yeah.
Do you want to take a minute to the public on this
okay.
issue really quick?
So, yes. So I will say, does anyone in the... Oh, bye, Hillary. Thank you. Anybody want to make any further comments about this?
About 4th of July.
A 4th of July. Oh, one more? Okay, great.
Hi, my name is Adam Weinberg. Hello, hi.
Hi.
I don't have a preference for either date, but I do have some questions that perhaps you can take into consideration. And maybe provide some feedback on. Because my concern is regarding transparency and the issue of information being provided that would be helpful to understanding the views and voices of the residents. In particular, if you know, we're going to cite numbers 20% differences in preferences. I think the size of the sample is important, and also the completeness and accuracy of the information. So some of my questions would be, what is the total cost by line item of the fireworks event, including preparation, execution, and incremental cleanup and repair, and or depreciated useful life of Glencoe assets, incremental insurance and public safety, and including all payments made by resident taxpayers via Glencoe Park District, Glencoe Village, and any accrued expenses such as overtime and or any other benefits, either via currency or barter in kind or items of value exchanged. For clarity, what is the maximum cost specifically for the fireworks? If the minimum is $20,000, is it $25,000, $50,000? Is it accurate that in 2012, the total cost for various North Shore towns ranged from $60,000 in Evanston to $9,500 in Deerfield? Who is contractually engaged to provide this for Glencoe, and who else have bids been received from? What is the specific contractual cost to rent the barge for the five-year term being proposed? Is it $15,000, I believe, did you say $13,000? $13,000 for next year. Per year. Who is contractually engaged to provide this, and who else have bids been received from? Are you attesting that the full and complete cost of the Glencoe fireworks event is no less than the $35,000 referred to in some of the communications made leading into the meetings, and no more than $40,000? If a resident wanted to underwrite this on behalf of the village, this would be the total complete cost? The Anchor article communicated that if a barge is not available on July 3rd, the date would stay the same, presumably July 4th, but viewing would return to Lakefront Park and Glencoe Beach would be closed. Can availability not be known and a contract not be entered into for 5 years, which would also provide cost certainty? I believe just now you addressed that issue. I'm not sure to what extent that was pursued. If not for a barge availability contract, what is the reason for this decision being made now to lock in the date for 5 years, effectively closing the beach to Glencoe residents for the next five July 4th holidays? That was also just raised for the first time, and what I heard was the reason being communications issues. I just last week was actually on my way out the door to play a little tennis with my daughter at the lakefront, and I received a tornado warning, and so literally, which was within minutes, so literally I was able to receive that, act on that. So I would hope communications issues addressed just now could be effectively addressed. What would happen with this contractual obligation if a decision is made regarding the Glencoe water plant and any construction that may impact the beach and lakefront park? Also just raised were the various, were the uncertainties regarding closing the beach for weather, issues like that. What happens if weather prevents the use of the barge on that date? Is that, do we still owe $13,000 or not? What damage is or may be caused to Glencoe property and assets related to the fireworks event? What expenses have been incurred in preparation during and following the fireworks event that would not otherwise be incurred? What are the resident and non-resident attendance data for the fireworks event with and without a barge? So past 5 years, I assume without a barge, prior 5 years with a barge. What neighboring towns do host and do not host the fireworks event, and on what days? Which of these towns close their entire beach on July 4th? Which towns use and pay for a barge? How do they pay for their July 4th costs? What alternative locations and options have been presented to Glencoe residents in a survey? What alternative locations and options have been explored? And then just quickly on the survey and obtaining a reflective understanding of residents' preferences either way, why have alternative options not been presented to or sought from Glencoe residents in a survey? What were the dates of the survey voting access? What specific methods? I saw it in the Glencoe Anchor was mentioned. I read it in the Glencoe Anchor September 12th issue. I don't know what date that's expected to be delivered. I've not yet received my September 19th issue. So I'm assuming, on or later than the 12th. On what dates and why was voting open? Was voting only possible by September 12th? As the September 12th issue of Glencoe Anchor stated, and why would that be? How many residents voted for or against? You shared that today, thank you. However, again, the concern being the limited information regarding costs and without seeking feedback regarding alternative locations and options. In the 5 years since this issue of great concern regarding the expense and the closing of Glencoe Beach on July 4th, how many residents' voices have been heard and incorporated into this decision, and are they accurately recorded and accounted for, just as one would expect an election or referendum to do, or a survey of this sort? For whom is the fireworks event intended to benefit? Whose money is used for the fireworks event? Who is the park board committed to serving in a fiduciary representative capacity? So if thank you for fielding these questions. If you'd like, I'd be happy to provide a copy. And I think I'd appreciate if you'd consider the questions and providing some of the information that might be helpful to all residents. And again, I have no preference on either date. I'm just hoping that the residents' voices on this important issue can be heard after appropriate communication and information and an opportunity to respond is provided. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Weinberg. Okay, so I am.
Is anybody else? I thought there was someone.
Oh, I'm sorry, ma'am.
Is this just about the fireworks, or is this
fireworks?
This section is, but then we're going to speak on Linden House, and we'll have comments on Linden House after that.
So I'll talk twice.
Okay. Go ahead.
Okay. So my name is Allison Kendall. I live at 235 Linden, Glencoe. I've lived here for 20 years. I did not know we were going to talk with you guys to talk about the fireworks tonight, so I did not do the survey. My husband didn't do the survey. We just kind of forgot about it. But both of us wanted to be on the 4th of July. I'm just saying there's an example that might change your data a little. There's a lot of other people like me that didn't fill out the survey. And just so I understand, right at this moment, you do not have a contract with this barge guy. You just have a guy saying, yeah, there's no reason. Did I get that right? Like, there's no reason we can't have it.
We have a contract. We have an arrangement.
For this year.
Just want to make sure I understand.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So I just want to say I'm for the fireworks on July 4th.
Okay, thank you very much.
Anyone else?
Okay. Now, we are going to have a discussion on the sale of Linden House, 233 Linden Avenue, Lot 1. Lisa, would you lead
sure.
that discussion?
Sure, I'm just going to pull some. Packets available here?
I don't have any
print at all. It's on available on our website.
It's on the website. It's available on the website.
Okay.
It's on the website.
As you know, the Park District is considering, can you go to the first one, the sale of 233 Linden Avenue, Lot 1, which is the site of the Linden House property. The Linden House property was originally used as the house of the district's executive director. However, the board no longer requires the executive director to live in Glencoe or provide the executive director with a house. So we did a little like FAQ, some questions about this item for the board just to consider. Why would the Park District sell the Linden House property? As I just said, it was originally the Park District director's house. It was moved to that site in the 50s and 60s. For the sole purpose of being the director's house, so it was never available for as a public asset or public use. Could the Park District rent the house? We have rented that house in the past since I came to the district. I have never lived in that residence. So we rented it for about three and a half years, and the house is in such a shape that it needs considerable renovations in order to rent it in the future. We feel the expense of maintaining and or renting a house does not meet the Park District's core mission and is not in the best interest of the community. We're really not in the renting business land, you know what I mean.
Right. Landlord business.
Landlord business.
So we
pretty much had that. As you realize, when I started, there was about three residents. We've no longer have any Park District staff living in Park District houses. Could the Park District tear down the house and revert it to parkland? The district explored the possibility of tearing down the house and restoring land to parkland, but understands it would be an expense to do so. The Park District owns and maintains a considerable amount of passive parkland near the Linden House, meeting the needs of the community in the area. In addition, the land historically served as a private residence has not been available for public use since that time. If the Park District sells the Linden House, what will the funds be used for? Under board direction, funds would be used towards our current master plan capital projects. These funds are dedicated to improving Park District infrastructure, including parks, playgrounds, pathways, and building improvements. Are you selling off all the land surrounding Linden House? Absolutely not. The residence was subdivided off the parkland in 2018. The boundaries are laid out to meet the required village codes. The existing park 22S is now 77,392 square feet. The resident lot at 233 Linden Avenue occupies 11,700 square foot lot. How have you engaged public input for this process? At our May 2018 public board meeting, the Park Board unanimously voted to apply to subdivide the private residence from Park 22S with the Village of Glencoe. There was an opportunity for public input at that meeting. In September 2018, the Village held a series of public meetings to discuss the subdivision plan approval for the parcel. Per village code, a public hearing sign was posted at the residence announcing the meeting. Park District personnel and board were available to answer any questions to respond to the public comment at the village board meeting. At the September 17, 2019 meeting, that's tonight, the board will listen to public feedback prior to taking action. The meeting was noticed, was posted at our facilities, on our website, on social media, and shared via email. The adjacent property owner was notified by the executive director via email regarding the discussion. If this is approved, the Park District will apply by petition in writing to the Circuit Court of Cook County, in which the parcel is situated, for approval to sell the property. The district must provide notice of the court hearing by publication in a newspaper in the county at least 10 days before the day of the hearing on the merits of the district's petition. After the hearing, the court may direct the sale of the property. If, when this is approved, the board will follow the legal requirements in the sale of the property to the highest responsible bidder. The board today must pass a resolution by 4/5 vote describing the property and declaring the land is no longer needed or useful for park purposes and that it intends to sell the land. Any questions? Can you pull up the plat? It's on. Oh, actually, it's the next one here. Okay.
I don't have a question for the comments.
There's a plat right there, 22 would be is a new Shukuk, resident lot. So 20, 19, 18, 17, 16, 15, 14, 13, 12, 11, 10, 9, 8, 7, 6. It's not going up. It's all Park District property. The lots next to it, so that's 23, 24, 25, are all residents. So it's at the end of a line of residential houses.
Across from South School and across from Wildflower Sanctuary.
All right, discussion. Stephanie.
I'm not really questioning. It's just that this isn't the first time we're discussing this, so that might seem quick in the audience, but we've been talking about this a long time, and we have a lot of background on it. So that's really just a summary. So I just wanted to make that clear. That
oh, yeah, we've been discussing this since 2017, I believe.
Mm-hmm. It's been a long time. Mm-hmm. I've expressed how I talked about this for a long time.
I think you have to express it publicly.
What you
I agree that it's not our mission to have this kind of real estate. If we were taking away more of the park, I think that would be more of an issue, but because that park remains and this is a house, it always was a house, it will be a house again, I don't have an issue with it.
Dudley, would you like to comment?
I agree that housing is really not in our mission. A couple things I'd like to stress. One is that we're changing the ownership of the house, but not the use of the land. And so it's not a change in use of land that's currently being used for, or it's not occupied for, a single family residential unit, and in the future will be the same for that, whether they keep the existing unit or build something new. Also, compared to the other lots, it's physically isolated, I think, a little bit from the rest of the park because of the current use. I don't think that by adding it to the park would really enhance it that much. The house itself is not in the original location. It was moved there previously. It definitely needs some work. One of the things I'm looking toward is the outcome of this. And I think actually this could actually improve the neighborhood. Because one would expect that a new owner, if they're going to live in the house, they're going to not only need to improve the house or replace the house with something that's even more valuable. and yet this is within the overall character of the community, that it's a single-family home on a conforming zoning lot. So I think it's a really good idea.
Thank you, Dudley. Josh, do you like to add
anything? Yeah, I would just add that this is an asset of the Park District homes that has not benefited the residents in any significant way for some time. And there's a little bit of algebra going on here to translate this into an improvement that we can actually benefit from, whether that's the playground or the trail to Old Bailey Parks or some other improvement. Those will be improvements to parks that people have to benefit from, but the wise use of our resources.
Okay. Mike, would you like to add anything? Okay. Yeah, you know, it sounds terrible to sell Park District property unless you realize this Park District property is a home and you're really selling a house, you're not selling a park. So it makes it certainly more understandable that it benefits the community if we sell it and a new owner enters the community. So there's value to the community to sell the house. I think... no one has any other comments? Any other thing you want to say?
Can you answer the phone?
Yeah. We'll move on to public comments. Does anyone in the... Okay, Allison, would you... Thank you.
Well, I'm just really disappointed. I don't understand why... I know you put it all up there about how the public was notified, that you had the meeting and everyone knows, you sent out emails, but nobody was specifically notified about the specific issue of park land. Even though this house on it, it is park district land that was being sold or considered to be sold in the way that you did, like the dog park survey or this whole fireworks survey where you went to a lot of trouble and did it at the library, you use social media, you just not email, you use next door blank phone. So I don't understand why you don't do something like that for this kind of thing. Because even though you can all say, oh, it's just a house, it is park district land, and if you tore the house down, it would make a beautiful addition to that park. So anyway, now I'll read my thing that I wrote. I wanted to say at the outset that I'm opposed to the sale because I believe the park district just should not sell land. If the house is a white elephant, then just tear it down. I know it's an expense, but probably not too much more than having fireworks on the 3rd of July. And mostly what I'm going to say is that I just think the public notification of the district and the board has been really disappointing. I know, like I said earlier, there was notices of the meeting, but nothing, you couldn't even read about this until Friday. That's when the agenda goes up, and then the packet didn't even go up till yesterday. So how that helps the public really understand it's going to happen today, tonight, when they have like, you know, barely 70 hours to even know about it. And we all know that people don't necessarily go online and look at the agenda and open up the packet and scroll down to page 115 to read all this stuff. That's just, people just aren't engaged that way. They have to be told. Anyway, the only sign that you've ever put up there was when you had to request the village where the parcel would be subdivided, and that was probably because that's like a village thing, not a park district. So that was when there was a sign. You could have put a sign up there just to engage the public. As you all know, they used to have a referendum to sell park land. But so, you know, a few years ago, the laws changed and it has allowed you to not have a referendum. And you didn't even have, you could have even at least had an online survey like you did with your fireworks and your dog park. So, anyway, I don't know how you can say that process is sufficient in notifying Glencoe residents that you're selling public land. I'm sure you filled all your minimum requirements under the law, but there was no real effort to use all the communication channels you had to tell people about the sale of public land, which is why I posted Ms. Shepherd's note to me, the email that she sent me explaining things, and I posted it on Nextdoor Glencoe today. And I just, believe that as stewards of the park district, we should be committed to informing the public that owns the land, the public being workers. The entire community should have a say, even if a referendum is no longer required by law as it was in the past. The public should be involved in the government sells land that belongs to the public, and it has not been. I would ask that before you take this vote whether to sell the land, you put it before the public in a referendum, or ask them, engage them, or at least do an online survey. Considering that notification of the sale has been so negligible, I would ask you not to vote no tonight and put this before the public. I just said that, I'm sorry. Because the public has trusted you to be its steward. That's all. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Would anyone else like to speak on this? Yes.
Yeah, I wasn't really even aware of this issue, but I think it makes a lot of sense to sell it. And I assume besides the money we'll realize from the sale, we'll be moving a lot back onto the taxpaying rolls. So this property will continue to supply money to the park district as long as somebody owns it. So I think it's a good deal. And I love green space, but this is something that hasn't been green space. It seems like it was utilized, as I was reading everything, basically as a place for someone to live from the start. We don't require the park district superintendent to live there. So I think it's a good idea.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you for joining.
Would you mind just stating your name?
Oh, yeah, Mike Darrow. Well, I didn't. One thing I was worried about is, it's not a bad idea, but what keeps you from selling more and more art?
I think this is a
good idea. Because it used to be a big thing on the issue of the landowners that said Barclay was hands off. So it doesn't set a precedent.
I appreciate that. Unfortunately, it's not a Q&A, but we could certainly address that comment. If you'd like, do you have anything else you'd like to share with us? Or?
No, the thing you had Saturday, the steeplechase.
The mud run? Oh, you had a bird's eye view.
Yeah.
Yeah, you did. Did you go into,
I love the
did you go look
slope.
At any of the...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's wonderful. Awesome. That's wonderful. So, yes, Lisa.
I think I can speak for all of us that none of us are in favor of selling parkland, and we view this as... like I said before, our house, it always was a house, Lori named that. It's not like we want to give this to a neighbor and say, sure, there's a swimming pool on our land. You know, like the gentleman who left said, the taxes will come back into the payroll, they will go to the village, they'll go to the park district. So it's going back into Glencoe. And I don't think any of us are interested in selling any park land. That is not our mission, just as we feel this real estate is not our mission. At the time when we had an executive director living there, that this house needs a lot of work. It just doesn't pay for us to do that.
Here, 40 years. Yeah. It's not bad. I'm just worried about what stops it.
Yeah.
I think what stops us is the circuit court.
Yeah.
So there's a mechanism in place that if a park board all of a sudden wanted to come and sell, you know, that whole parcel, the circuit court has to approve off on this. So we have to petition. There's a public, public comment section, and we have to tell the court why this parcel is different than a parkland. Believe me, we don't take selling parkland. We take it very seriously, and there's probably about five times a year that people approach us for wanting to buy even like little tiny slivers in their backyard, and we say absolutely not. We don't. That's part of the park. So I don't. Yeah, I agree with you. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so when was the last time we sold parkland?
Not that I can recall.
The precedent. This is a unique.
This is very unique. I think it has to do with the fact that it's always been a residence and we don't need
it's
it
not
anymore.
Being used for the public good, that the other parks are being used.
Exactly.
Will they list the house
for you? Yes, correct. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and with all the legal standards for it, yeah.
Okay, if there's nothing else, any other comments? Okay, we are going to move on to the financial report. Carol?
Excellent.
We are now 6 months through our current fiscal year. Obviously, with the summer months behind us, we can take a closer look at the each department and boating department combined. We started out kind of iffy with the cold, rainy weather in the summer, which does impact, obviously, daily fees, but also pass sales. But as of the six-month mark, we're under what we've done the last two previous years, but we're still at about $100,000 net. That will be used over the coming 6 months for utilities, salaries spread over the 12-month period, the general and admin transfer that goes into for our general and admin department in corporate. So we're still hoping for a positive, but it's not as bad as what it looked like earlier this summer. Also keeping an eye on our fitness department. As you know, we changed the revenues are coming in on a monthly basis due to our monthly memberships where people are being automatically billed every month versus a one-time revenue shot of paying an annual membership. So hopefully by the end of the fiscal year, we still have 6 months, we're going to make up some of that deficit, but that's one thing we'll continue to take a look at. Also the same thing with daycare. Typically during the summer months, we obviously have lower revenues. A lot more people do not have their children in daycare during the summer months. We have to keep our staffing consistent because we then notice the huge jump come September when we have everybody typically coming back with the school year and we're running full force. So we'll keep an eye on that as well, but just some of the things to point out in this month's report.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering about is the daycare expense. I mean, I know we expanded last year. Over 2 years ago.
So this will be the one-year anniversary this September, so. Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of transitioning, too, as Bobby has mentioned in the past, with the ages of moving up children into the now five different classes.
Mm-hmm. Six.
Wow. So that, again, because it's only been a year, we started last September, that's starting to kind of transition out, too.
Yeah, seems like a big jump.
Managing the wait list when they transition in September, because many people, when they find out they get off the wait list, they have to give 4 to 6 weeks notice of their current daycare. Otherwise, they get charged for that month and then they're getting. So we'll try to work with them. And you also have existing participants who get pregnant again, and the wait lists are constantly evolving. It's very tricky, especially with DCFS, too.
Any other questions? All right.
Sorry, with the daycare, I'm constantly looking at these numbers and just thinking the margin's going down as you get increased revenue, but your expenses are going up higher. Is this if we keep going on this, we're going to hit the red? I'm not saying this should be our greatest profit center. I don't necessarily believe in that, but it shouldn't be necessarily. This trajectory is concerning to me. Will this turn the course later on?
We just got 20 enrollments, additional enrollments for September versus August, so we'll really see if, that's the September figures. It is worth noting that we made major staff adjustments to part-time, because from when I started, it was probably a 40% increase in what we were paying. We're paying minimum wage effectively to teachers, and we're no longer doing that.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So that has finally started to impact. We're starting to see that now that we made those changes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
we're going to keep an eye on, right?
Yeah, we're just pretty much.
If you're going to increase the wages by 40%, you probably have to think about the long term there. Going, you're having your margin from this time 2018 to actually more than having your margin from 2018 to 2019. So that.
We just started the budget process too for next fiscal year, so that tends to be when staff are really digging deeper into costs and revenue, so that should bring more light to the
subject. It's not, I don't necessarily think this should be a high margin business, but it should probably be right as well.
You have to recall that also the net that we made on Children's Circle is quite high in the past, and that's why we decided to make salary adjustments so that to pay the teachers
to attract really good teachers and keep them, and then lower our actually net margin because we were making more than our direct expenses.
Yes.
So that was it's also calculated.
That was a conscious decision.
It was a conscious decision not to make $100,000 on the program.
Yes.
Make $50,000, say.
Yeah, I think that's great. So this is probably going to plateau out. And as someone who's children of youth,
that's really something on our radar.
I am definitely appreciative of the better staff. I think our community is better for it. So if we design, this is perfect.
Yep.
Yes.
So good questions. Very good questions.
Yeah. I mean, the trajectory of the revenue is what my eye falls on.
Yeah.
And I also look at the surplus falling, but I'm actually okay with that.
Yeah.
I was more uncomfortable with looking at that as a real
as a profit
center.
Right.
You know,
but
it's the change that's alarming appropriately. Yeah. We raised that, but I think maybe it's going to be a paradigm shift in the way we kind of look at that, which I think is absolutely fine.
Mm-hmm.
If there's nothing else,
good to underline some of the ideas that we have for increasing revenue at Watts, whether it's through temporary rentals or expanding the space or for a hockey program, whatever. But you know, I think that we're going to have to address that. I think we are addressing that, and we'll be probably talking some more about that in our CIP program as well.
Yes.
Yeah.
Good point.
Yeah.
You know what I said. Right. Okay, so we've got a lot here. Are we going to talk about the camp report, or
so
are we going to move?
We provided the camp report. We're prepared to answer any questions. We decided to table the actual presentation by the three staff, knowing that we had a lot of stuff on the agenda before. But if any commissioners have any questions, Bobby's prepared to answer them from the report. And if you'd like, we'd bring staff next month to give the oral report if needed.
I read through it, and I think our responses on the survey were good. We're never going to get 100% satisfaction, but the dissatisfied were a very low percentage.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I always look at that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, overall, it's very positive. And obviously, our enrollments go up and down with the class sizes, and I like that you provide that for those who don't, who aren't in that right now. I know the class sizes because I'm in there with the kid, but when you don't, you know, it definitely affects our program. And so it really makes sense with the numbers.
Yeah, I think I read through this as well. The only thing I think that you could probably add to this is if your questions are consistent year over year, a year-over-year benchmark. It's hard to understand, are we trending the right way? Are we trending the wrong way? I do think the numbers are indicative of this phenomenal program. It is a cost-effective program, and I love the fact, and it's a fact that people choose it because they're friends of them. But I think that would help give insights to finding out where the program is going over here.
So is your point that you'd like a comparison of, so the surveys are almost identical every year,
right.
So you'd like a benchmark of three rounds for those questions?
Right. If last year, for instance, the question 64, would you recommend the collective park district camp to a friend? Right now you got about 85% yes, about 13% no. If that last year was 20% no, and now you're at 10% no, well, that's awesome. But if last year we were at 95% yes and 5% no, then there's something going on that it's hard to see. So the numbers in isolation are...
Absolutely. We could definitely benchmark those questions in the future.
Really,
that's good to know.
You got to have a great camp, so.
It's good to know.
Just building on the annual comparison that I read earlier, the only thing of concern was the enrollment that's on page 152 or page 17. It looks like enrollment is down about 10% from 2017 to 2019.
The camp versus school enrollment on the 5-year average, running average, that one.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So we put this school enrollments, and then we put what our average individual enrollments are on campus. So there's 659 individuals in Glencoe, Tucker camps. So what we are noticing is there is a drop in the number of individuals over the last 2 years. It's averaging out just in line with the 5-year average. But what we're noticing is the individuals who are taking our camps are expanding their days. So the revenue is going up because they're going from 7 to 6. Rather than doing 9 to 3, but we are losing people to those specialty camps.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so much competition.
Yeah,
it is. And we can't be everything to everybody. We also don't have space. We find it very difficult to offer additional specialty counts and take a center while regular camp is going on. So we're going to have to look at Watts. We did put a survey question out about specialty camps, specifically about a sports camp. Yeah. And over 50% of people said they were interested in a specialty sports camp. We offered it this last year. It was zero enrollment, but we are looking at a different vendor. Currently just started with us in the fall to see if that gets any more traction. So again, we're going to have to find a way to put that camp. But we are aware that we are losing overall number of people because of, you know, sleepaway camp now starts at 5.
Oh.
Which is insane.
Five. Yeah, every year I'm amazed at how many people are going.
So that's changed. It's gone from fourth grade down to kindergarten. So that's we're watching that too.
But I did see that you have, I don't know how effective it was, I bet it was, where you have Camper's Choice, where you allow them to specialize, which I thought that would really be appealing to kids.
Yeah, we're going to look to make some small improvements there. And we're also looking at the swim lessons, because that impeded. Swim lessons would probably be the area of most improvement from staff's point of view and parents. We're really trying to find a way that would work so the kids don't miss out on Camper's Choice. The camp schedule is so packed, and then you also have the kids who go to summer school who miss out on that because we pick them up. So we're looking at that. We're aware that we need to focus on that.
Yeah, because kids are so different. You know, I was starting second, third, fourth, fifth grade, and they, you know, my boys would have hated arts and crafts. They had a horrible attitude, but they hated it. But boy, if sports, anything sports, they would have loved. So if they were able to self-define what they want, that sort of bridges these specialty camps, which can be very intensely devoted to one thing, you know.
Yeah,
so I like to see that. I like to see that.
That's great feedback. I agree with you.
Yeah.
Last year, I think there was a midwinter camp reunion or something here.
People are either in camp mode or not in camp mode.
Yeah.
So much going on in the community. Guys.
Yeah.
Can you be with us some kind of, this has been a great discussion. I had no idea about, increasing share of wallet, if you will, dollars per camper. That would have been an excellent addition to this slide or a follow on to this slide. Maybe it's in here somewhere.
We didn't go down that road. We were going to more have a discussion about it in our presentation, just rather than putting it in the report. But we changed the way we did enrollment this year. Instead of, if you're doing an extended day, instead of signing up for three separate camps, you sign up for one now. So it gives us better ability to track, benchmark again, what people are signing up for. It was very confusing, and then our customer service had to calculate discounts based on, so we're trying to streamline all that, but also get better information so we can look at what is that dollar figure. Not that that's why we do it, but it's a good benchmark.
Yeah, well, I was just thinking you have to be careful about inflation because it looks like it's going up when really nothing fundamental is happening.
Correct.
You answered my question.
The only thing that isn't in there is the resident non-resident breakdown of what people might be interested in. It's 90% residents take our camps, 10% non-residents. Mm.
Yes.
What are you thinking about for the future for these children's programs? Continuation of the same or new STEM programs or I don't know, what's the trend in the business, so to speak?
Specialty camps is clearly worked out right now, and flexibility. We saw that when we changed the enrollment for Action Quest for older kids from 2-week, 4-week, and 8-week options to 1-week, 4-week, and 8, and we got a massive surge in enrollment because people are trying to find fillers. Mm-hmm. The days of people just doing 8 weeks, they're still there, but people go on vacation, they want to try STEM, they want to try sports, their friends doing chess camp. So offering more options like sailing and aquatics, we're looking at how we do that. That's been very popular. Can we expand aquatics camp, which looks like we might be able to do that a little bit. Ceramics camp, one of the Campus Choice offers this year was ceramics, and that was extremely popular, which led to increased enrollment in our fall ceramics class. So how do we build leverage that is what we're looking at. How do we bring in an FSA to run a sports day, or how do we engage kids who might be interested in a different, maybe improv. So we're looking at how do we make our program better, add more options, and more structured free play. So we're still having that free play, that's very important, but having structured slightly better so kids get a little more out of it.
And like you said, we're limited in space. You know, we're not like a park district that has five facilities to run an art camp and a theater camp and all that. So you're, you know, competing with that too. But that obviously is the right direction. So, and a sports camp for sure. And if you're looking at the trends here, you know, it is, again, what your friends are doing too. If 20
yes.
kids mm-hmm. say, hey, I'm going to do FSA, you lose those 20 kids. And we all know that that's a factor here.
Yeah, it is. Mm-hmm. It is. But what shifts one way, shifts back the other way, you know, that's, you know, as long as you're watching it closely and see, you know, making sure you're not missing something.
Our team does a great job managing expenses too. When we see that the program is, you know, enrollment is low, making sure that we are watching our wage costs and our contractual expenses and supplies. And then if we do get a surge in enrollments, which happens in a program you're not expecting, how do we make sure we're meeting the expectations of those participants?
It looks like we make a lot of money on those gap camps too. I don't know why I can't think of the right name. The before and after.
Because there's not as many direct expenses like field trips and such associated with that.
Okay, that makes sense. Yes, right.
What we do know is that it was what you. I'm sorry.
Go ahead. You don't allocate overhead.
No.
To these camps.
Not the way we target margin.
Yes.
Right?
So when you say make it, they're paying all the indirect expenses associated with building, so your net pays for the lighting, the maintenance, which is extensive, you know, the buses, the, you know, everything that doesn't go directly in the budget.
Just, it is worth noting that part-time seasonal staff expenses are going up pretty significantly.
Yes.
You probably noticed that
in
our expenses.
Yes.
And they're going to go up again next year.
They are.
Every company, every place out there that hires entry-level workers is experiencing it, up, down, left, right.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
What is it now, just out of curiosity, what's the hourly rate?
$10 is the minimum.
Yep.
So it's, the state law has changed, Carol can correct me if I'm wrong. The Cook County wage is one thing, but then the state law is going up in 2025, and we're trying to stay in line with that.
And we have to be competitive.
Exactly.
So it doesn't much matter what the
competition is. Yeah. It's you got 4% unemployment.
Right.
It's a real challenge.
Yep.
For seasonal staff, it's probably less impactful for high school kids and college kids, but for full-time, it's a big deal.
Yeah.
It's a big deal.
Yeah. Even for a part-time seasonal, it's going to be hard to improve. Yeah. Very much.
Okay. If
thank you. Good questions.
Else, thank you. Thank you, Bobby. Let us move on to staff reports. Business.
Sure. I just want to highlight in your packet, there is the legal calendar starting. We start with the levy discussion, which there's a finance committee of the whole meeting scheduled for prior to the regular board meeting on October 15th, because we don't have a committee meeting in October. So just highlighting that, and then there's the whole legal calendar is in the packet. So maybe make a copy, because there is significant dates in there that just to be aware of. We're starting to cycle all over.
It's groundhog day.
Okay. All right. Rec and facilities.
As was already mentioned, the mud run was a huge success. 356 signed up. It was a really great day. Great community feel to it. Anyone who went loved it. So we were very proud of that one. Parks team knocked it out of the park. Well, the whole team was on board with that. It was great. A lot of people got to see the new deck hockey sports court, which was cool. A lot of people, even staff, got to play on it. So they're offering a bunch. We're offering a bunch of free opportunities to take clinics, drop-ins over the next 6 weeks, which will be, from my understanding, no charge for any of it to try to get some publicity around it. We're very excited to see what programs, after-school programs, could come out of that, birthday party, tech for use of the facility, get people engaged in using the facility more year-round.
I'm very excited about it.
Yeah.
Not for my kids, because they don't do that sport, but for the kids, using lots, as we've all said, is like our goal, and it's just great to
have it.
Yeah.
Any way, any kids, you don't have to be a hockey person, you can play on that sports court. And I love it for the after-school kids, too. Will they have access to it as well?
Yeah, that's the goal, is to get them to use it a couple of days a week.
Good.
Maybe we're going to approach the school about using it for PE.
Oh, that would be good.
Right.
Oh, that's fun.
We're going to see how it works with the weather, with the leaves, with rain. It's going to be really great to see proof of concept on
Yes, that. Exactly. And congratulations on the mud run.
Yeah.
Honestly, it was, it's so entertaining. You don't need to have a kid in it just to go and watch this craziness. It was just so fun. And seeing kids just loving what they were doing, and well done. And creative, because you had different events this year. You mix it up a little bit, which I really like. A good PR for the community, actually, for the Park District. Very, very well done.
No, Bobby, did your son beat someone's son on the...
He did. My son beat
I'm just wondering.
His son.
I would like to say, I had the whole team, Chris's Parks team, they build all those obstacles, and they take great pride in... thinking of new creative things, and every year I'm blown away. I'll be like, how did they think of that? So from the showers that they made,
an
improvement to, as you saw me doing the bully thing. Yeah.
Oh my God, the first year with the hose.
Yeah.
One hose.
One hose that people were cleaning down with their fingernails.
Yeah. Move on.
And not as many lost shoes this year.
No, with the rain, that rain, flooded rain helped us tremendously.
Yeah.
It's like her shoes I can like use again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. But did you see people duct tape?
Yes,
I did. And I saw them floating in the water with duct tape.
Yeah, it didn't matter.
I have one comment.
Parents don't save their shoes. We save our kids' crappy shoes specifically for the mud run.
Well, I forgot. I'll get to be a fan.
I usually take it. Number three, it cogged the kids up because the kids were trying to get down, but there were three kids below them and they couldn't get down. And I just happened to be standing in that one, so that's just my construction. People were like...
You had to wait.
They had to wait, and so that frustrated people. And that was one where people weren't telling them that they had to go, so a lot of kids ran by it, but I had them come back. And said, oh, you got to do it. Because I was standing there, I saw it, and I was like, yeah, maybe this one isn't.
Yeah, we adjust them every year, and they make changes, and they already have notes from every year. But they do a great job. And then Liz and Bobby and the whole recreation team, actually every team, this is one of the mandatory volunteering for special events, and everybody loves it. So they don't even care. It's a great team effort for all three teams. And
I'm wasting time, but I'm going to tell you my favorite one was the one that utilized the natural bioswale by just putting bars across it and having people run through it. That was brilliant.
Yep, the over-under.
Over-under was great.
The old people have been happy with four inches of standing water in the park.
We keep it there for a reason.
We have it there.
So if nothing else, we will move on to Parks and... Wait, did we do Parks and...
We did Parks.
Yes. No, not really.
I just want to say also to Bobby, the camp is they make it look so easy. And the tremendous effort takes behind the scenes, and they make it look so easy, but it's not. So the whole rec and camp staff, and please pass that on to the ones that aren't here, did a phenomenal job. All the work behind it, all the safety behind it, it's tremendous. And not to get one call from camp, that one call that I get, so that's a testament to Bobby and his team. So which is usually comes up my way. So tremendous effort. So thank you.
Fantastic reporting. This was really a good
very
report.
Nice event. Thank you.
My sister's a camp director. She's been a camp director for 20 years. I know how hard it is.
Yes.
I know you don't breathe until that.
Yeah. So last day of camp.
Huge sigh of relief that last day.
So. One other thing before I go. Beach Safe, I just wanted to point out, I know that it's in your pamphlet, and kudos to Aaron and Bobby and Chris and Matt, especially Matt. This Beach Safe program is something that we can be proud of, that we will continue to market. We're hoping it takes off in other communities. In fact, that's one of Matt's winter jobs, is to go to other park districts to see if we can really get this. This is one of those things that we call the NRPA pillar, social equity, that when so much is given to a community, we should give back. And this is something that I challenged staff, and I said, we need something for the meet the pillar of social equity, and they came back with this program, and I was just like floored. And then the implementation was flawless, and the smiles, if you just look at some of these pictures, just on their faces and what they got. And I'm just going to put it in perspective. One child, when he was wearing his life jacket, said, would this help me from being shot?
Oh, God.
So when you think about that, that's what his, wearing his life vest, that where they come from, what a day this was, and a day that they could have relax and have fun and also learn at the same time, gives you chills. So that such a, these 3 days made such an impact in all those kids' lives. So I'm very proud of the team for doing that also.
That made
so.
Me think, all these children live so close to this incredible body of water.
I know.
And they either have no exposure, or if they have exposure, they have no skills to manage themselves in the water. So
exactly.
I thought exactly that as I read through that, what a great program it was.
I think our staff got a lot out of it, too.
I think everybody got out of it,
jumping in the water with those kids.
Oh, that's so nice.
But it was a really fun day.
Good.
We were so
good for everybody.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
Both days. We had 2 days with 3 groups.
Yeah, one day was rained out.
Yeah.
All right, Chris.
Okay, Chris.
Oh, it's hard to follow Beach Day. Everybody gives the parks team a lot of kudos for the mud run, but it's because everything else goes so smoothly. What it takes to get 350 kids to the starting line in the rain time is really unbelievable. I mean, the whole event, it's a district-wide event. You know, I know everybody gets really focused on the amenities and the foam and the mud, but there's so much that goes into it behind the scenes. So much organization, so much hard work on the part of the recreation team, marketing, finance, everybody is on this one as a group, administration, everybody. So, you know, I nodded when everybody said, oh, parks, but it's really a district event. And, you know, my team goes out there and they're grumpy and they're, you know, putting everything together and thinking about ways to torture the kids without hurting too much. And, you know, it's a really fun and exciting event. So thank you for all the kind words and feedback.
They had a lot of smiles on their face.
Yeah. So we just wrapped up the Ticket Center shutdown. So I got a lot of work done here at the facility. Capital projects are moving forward. I have to say, the Ticket Playground has brought to me a whole other level of criticism in my career. I have a 3-year-old every single day who asks me why the playground isn't done. It's an hour ride home in the car every single day. When's it going to be done, Dad? It's going to be done today. You weren't out there, Dad. Why weren't you out there? Work continues on the project. I really, literally, I know you must get it from me. You know,
that's awesome.
Now I have to sit there at home.
Yeah, he's just, when's it going to be done, Dad? When's it going to be done?
You better get out of those guys.
So when's it going to be done, Chris?
I'll tell you what I tell my son. At some point in the fall of 2019.
Okay. Good. Gives you a lot of questions.
Okay.
Early November, we're shooting for it if the weather holds out. You know, things are moving along. We've got the drainage installed, concrete seams drained out, so contractors making good time on it, and they have been less than disruptive here so far. Which has been really great. So
tell you, they've been great.
That's great. But so that project is moving along. We're wrapping up the roof replacement at Watts. Project specs are being developed for the Truman Overlook, so that's still moving ahead. The old Green Bay Trail project in all of its entirety is still continuing to progress, so design development is on schedule with that project as well. So here in the fall, we're kind of starting our fall planting season, trees, grasses, shrub, things of that nature. We really lost the entirety of the spring planting season based on the rain, so we're, you know, overdrive here to kind of catch up in the next 5 to 6 weeks before the weather really starts to turn on us. So any questions or concerns about my report?
We don't have a date yet on when we'll start construction on the trail or moving across the pipe.
The hope would be out to bid January, February of 2020.
Mm-hmm. Hopefully spring.
Spring of 2020 would be, you know, whether that's an early spring or a late spring is still TBD.
Okay. Well,
We did meet with the IDNR representative for Asla Grant today. So that went very well.
Oh, good.
Yes,
there, but there's a lot. I just want to.
There's a lot.
I want to prepare you. There's more competition last year. There's 130 districts applying for.
110 last year.
110 last year for. And they, it totals of $46 million worth of projects, and those 130, and they only have 20 some. So.
Oh, wow.
Just a you know, but,
yeah,
but
yeah,
high percentage.
Yeah.
A, we'll work it.
Okay.
So. Erin.
Well, also, the mud run takes up a lot of time.
I'm going to move you along.
In fact, Gun Code is going out this week. Also, I put a little brief thing about the website usability study. It's not complete yet, but it's really interesting. We did staff focus groups. We did one-on-one interviews with customers. And we've also been doing heat maps of the website as people use it. So we've been recording people's behavior.
Okay.
So cool.
We'll see what happens.
I have a suggestion, which I'm sure you already know, the wording transparency portal.
That was in the...
I hope. I figured it was. It's baffling wording for that, so I'm sure you'll address that.
Yep,
thank
it
you.
Was in there.
Yeah.
I do blame Chris for that,
you know.
Actually.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that was your idea?
Lots of municipalities are doing that now, so blaming for that.
Yeah, okay. All right. So, if nothing else, Eric?
Nope, that's
okay. Safety and Wellness Committee.
We had a really good August. We had a safety week the last week in August where we worked with public safety on three drills. We did an alternative fire drill, which meant that we pretended to close exits, so people have to have different exits, especially in their early childhood with the cribs. And then we also had a tornado drill, and we also had our first lockdown. So we work really closely with public safety. We're meeting with them next week to get some feedback on how we improve that going forward for our next time we do those drills. So very good, productive drills in August.
Alrighty. So the executive director report, Lisa. We did have one little...
I can do it.
Okay, so...
I just wanted to make it clear, we were notified that throughout town, someone posted a sign that said, all are invited, all are welcome to tonight's meeting at Jacob Center, Park Board meeting regarding the sale of Lakefront Park. I make it very clear that we have no intention to sell Lakefront Park, and whoever put this up was very erroneous. My guess was to draw attention to the second section or restoration and preservation of tennis courts. So we posted our social media site this notice saying that this is incorrect with our agenda and a link to go to it so people could have factual information. So I have no idea who did this, but it was posted throughout town. And it's sad that incorrect information was put out there. Next, we are very excited because next Tuesday... I know. Or that goes to show you that people are watching our social media when we said fake news and put that agenda, and they saw everything, all other good things we're doing. So I'm hoping that was the case.
Were there any cameras that saw posted in public that saw who would have done that?
No. Unfortunately,
I did.
I mean, look, this is a.
You did?
I mean, I'm sure it was posted in. Downtown with the bank has some, but it's a private. It is a shame when misinformation gets portrayed throughout the community. Scare tactics don't seem to work, first of all, and doesn't seem to benefit the community as a whole.
I agree. Good news is that the wait is finally almost over for our gold medal announcement. Yeah. It happens next Tuesday. I will send you a link where I believe you can watch it if you're able to on your computer, since you will not be there this year. So we're very hopeful. I know.
I the same with us.
Which means we'll win because you have to decide. I'm just kidding.
No, we saw that too.
Yeah. I'm sure you'll
purposely think it's because we're not there. We're so important.
That's going to change the decided outcome. But we're
cracking my fingers.
We're very excited.
So we'll be able to watch the presentation, mm-hmm. the one that...
Yes.
I think they Facebook Live it. Yeah.
Oh, they do?
Yeah.
What time?
Yeah.
Usually around 9 or 10, right?
Yeah, but Eastern time. And it's after the keynote.
So it's on Tuesday. Right. I will send you guys an email with everything that I can find out about it so that you can do it, to watch it live. They do it after the keynote, so it's kind of, you know, they don't put the keynote on there, but they only put the announcements of the awards on there.
Okay.
So I think we did an excellent job. We've always been gold medal worthy. I think we just have done an excellent job this time around learning and how to tell our story. So much better. Kudos to Aaron for pushing us all to really work on that script and our verbiage.
No, but we've also worked on the pillars.
We also looked at, you know, that's why I like doing this kind of stuff, because it really helps us really examine what we're doing really well and what we can really improve on. Mm-hmm. And I think each year pushed us to say, wow, we could do something better, hence Beach Safe came out of that. So that's why, like, both the Signature Federation and National Gold Medal is good to strive for, because those both push you to be, leaders in your industry, which we all like to do. We're really competitive. So we'll keep our fingers crossed. And you all get a text from me or a phone call if we win, probably screaming. So we're very excited about that. We talked about summer camp beach. We're going to do the beach next month, the beach report. But the Bodhi Beach is still open. And when it gets really warm on weekends, we open the beach house down at the bluff. So that's going pretty well, right?
We've had a lot of it
this weekend. Yeah. We were hopeful, but now it's raining. It looks like storms this weekend. But we will keep it open until October 13th on weekends, the boathouse. And so, but Matt has been doing a phenomenal job down there. Early childhood is off to a great start. They did amazing training, and I have to tell you, Jessica, Amanda, early childhood team have been very flexible in their play time, and with the take of playground under construction, it's great, and the kids are having a great time. And PJK has also been great partners with that, so we look forward to that. But I'm very grateful for their flexibility. After school program at Watts is full, right? And the regular program, so we keep on watching that, and we'll continue to talk about how we can expand that in the future as we see trends of dual-income families moving into town. I don't think there's anything else. It's just saying we talked about that. We talked about that. Building improvements, staff news. Congratulations to Chris. We said that last month. Yay. She's adorable. I think that is all I have. Any questions?
I saw that we took that old shed and moved it down so that they have access to the bikes and the fences there. And then I forgot to ask this on the playground. Those shade structures are remaining. I assume you just took down the actual structures to not ruin it during construction.
That's shade, correct. Yeah, the shade things, yeah. Mm-hmm. Exactly, they're staying.
Yeah.
Yeah, do you like the little fence?
Down the pipes just because they could get hit with a tractor, and the contractor didn't want to have to replace them, so they took them down.
How are the teachers handling the needing to take the kids out in the field? And
I think they're doing a great job. They've been so creative. In fact,
wonderful.
The GJK director said it's really challenging our staff to do something different with the spaces, and you know, it's almost like PE class and stuff like that. And I think our teachers are feeling the same way.
Half of them love it, half of them hate it.
Depends, right?
It's a lot harder. I mean, I've seen them a lot. They have some kids who really watch.
You really have to watch those kids.
They will appreciate playground so much more now.
They will.
Especially the different spaces. Because it is a challenge. I mean, I see them as hard to wrangle and watch.
It is. It's impossible. Yeah.
Any day that my child is out on that field, he goes to bed at 8:30. Versus the 5 or 6 times he feels the need to get out of bed.
Yes.
Yes. I'm a big fan of
I love the field too.
Track because
yeah.
Running that boy.
They go. Yeah. I agree with you. It's really good exercise.
Are they using the indoor gym more?
They are. They are absolutely. But with the weather, they're taking advantage of it.
Yeah, they're
Just going outside.
They're on the tricycles.
When you can be outside, That's for sure.
Do they walk to the other, to the infant playground or the one behind here?
They haven't yet. You know, the plan is to. We've got a pretty strict schedule, because really only in the last week did we start back with preschool video scene, GJK. Mm-hmm. So now we'll start exploring to the Elm and others.
Sure.
takes a long time to walk through.
Yeah. Also, the ratios change when because it's a field trip. Three, it goes up by a factor of three when you go on field trips.
Oh, really? Okay. All right. If nothing else, we will move on to recommended motions.
Okay.
I entertain a motion to approve the donation and naming rights agreement for the parks located at Lincoln Drive and Crescent Road as presented.
So moved.
All right. Okay.
Any discussion about the donation or the naming rights?
See it in the packet. I'm sure it's here somewhere.
It is. I'm going to tell you where.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I know. We'll go back the way.
Yes, it's page 109.
How long is it for?
It's 100 paid over 3 years, 20, 21, 22.
So $300,000.
What is it?
25 years.
25 years.
Yeah, the 25 years. Mm-hmm. Or we get the. It's a flat 25, or is it a.
It's minimum of 25 years, but after 25 years, they have the right to give another donation to rename it. They have the first right of refusal. So if someone else comes and wants to donate and rename it, they have the first right of refusal.
And if nobody steps in to donate to that park, the name just
stays
correct. Until there's a redo of the playground and somebody comes in. Yeah.
Got it. Thank you.
It's actually a good question because there was a little revision in the language on that part. Otherwise, the contract went very smoothly and it was,
We're very grateful for the generosity of this family. And they're very excited. We showed them the playground design. They're very excited about the playground, and I think it's very fitting for the spirit of their wife and mom. So,
and sister,
and daughter. Yes, and daughter.
Yeah.
The whole family. We met with the whole family. They're a delightful family, and these are two amenities, the port in place and the train, that we would not be able to do otherwise. Those are donor funded. So.
Perfect.
Okay, and in addition, they agreed that should we want to name, get donations for each of the train cars, they're willing to allow that to happen. So if we want to do extra money for those train cars, we could do that. But they want first right of refusal for that, too.
That is also yes. And can we say what the park will be named?
Yes, it's in here. Yeah.
Okay.
It'll be, yes,
so
it's Duke Park.
Official Duke Park.
Yep.
Which is a nice ring to it.
Yes, it is.
Okay. So if there's no more discussion, roll call vote, please.
Who did the motion? I'm sorry.
I did.
Okay. Mm-hmm. You got the second?
Yeah.
Okay. Commissioner Warren?
Yes.
Commissioner Covey?
Yes.
Commissioner Lennon?
Yes.
Commissioner Underdog?
Yes.
President Brooks?
Yes. Motion passes.
We have to go back to the independent sidewalks.
Oh, where is that?
We just didn't write out what it is.
Yeah. Oh, you didn't write out what it is.
No, you have to make a motion to approve fireworks.
Okay, I entertain a motion to approve the Independence Day fireworks.
For 2020.
For 2020.
Only.
For 2020, I won't say only, I'll just say for 2020, will to be held, to be barge fireworks on the 3rd of July.
Any motion, a second?
Second. So moved.
Yep.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
So.
Any discussion?
Yes. Any further discussion?
I have one comment to think about. And I do like the idea of a test. I think it's the right thing to do. I'm debating whether or not a test is a good idea when the on a Saturday, because it sort of negates some of the arguments that we had about the after the next day or things like that. So I'm really torn with this one, and I'm just wondering if we're going to do a test, is it better to do a test when the third's on a Tuesday and the fourth is on a Wednesday, and everyone's got to go back to work on a Thursday. So I just want to put that out there to think about. If anyone has any thoughts on that. Because I think a lot of the comments were, so it's a really long day and work the next day. And
are you saying you want to support it or you want to delay it?
Well, I'm trying to figure out if it's worth it. If we're going to do it for 1 year, is it worth it to do it on a year when the 4th of July is on a Saturday? That's the point. Because if the, and I think we asked the public about a 5-year issue, and we're now thinking about a test of a 1 year. So does a 1 year test when it falls on Saturday change your mind? Maybe it doesn't.
I mean, if this is unique that it's on a weekend, and well, obviously it happens every, what, 6 or 7 years. So it is a hard one. I mean, again, you can make the same argument and say, okay, most people probably are going to be off on that Friday, so it's nice to take off the weekend. It's really a hard.
I really struggle with this one because what we're asking is we surveyed one thing, but we're proposing another, right? We surveyed, I think Aaron from the survey said for 5 years.
Yeah, we just put an arbitrary date in there.
Which is fine.
Yeah.
But note that the staff is still recommending the 5 years.
Right.
The only reason is we don't have a contract for a barge for 5 years, so we can't definitively say.
Yeah.
100, they are 99.9%.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
But they will not give us 100%.
And I get that.
And there was a question proposed to you, and I didn't know the answer of the neighboring beaches. If those beaches are open at the port, is like kind of park open and
Yes, I think we're the only one that is that we closed the beach to fire up because they have much bigger beaches. They have more than one beach, and they have Wilmette, for example, is a long beach. They're able to close off one section, and so we are the only one closing, which has been helpful because on the 4th, when we close our beach, we send our residents to Winnetka for no charge. I mean, pretty much, if you have your Glencoe Beach pass, you can go to Winnetka for free that day. So, and or get resident rates at Winnetka. So that's been very helpful for you.
I just wish it was a 90-10.
I know, it's a hard one.
I mean, I assume if like the barge doesn't show up and it's their fault, we don't pay. But is it in the contract, we have something in the contract that says if they don't show up. Obviously weather is another issue. I don't know what that says in the contract.
So we'd have to still negotiate those terms. What we have is an agreement that they guarantee they can get the availability of the barge.
So weather impedes their progress to our
It depends. For example, so on the 4th of July, as soon as they start setting up the fireworks, they have to fire off those fireworks. So no matter what. So for example, if they're unable to shoot them off, say, on July 4th because there's a storm, they started setting up, they're already going, the storm whips through, like the other night, a storm comes out of nowhere, they have to shoot those off. So we would have to keep the beach closed on July 5th. You guys weren't on the board, and we discussed this. The beach would have to be closed on July 5th, and then we would shoot them off on July 5th. Mm-hmm. Or they shoot them after the storm's over and no one's there to watch them, whatever. But so the same thing happens with the barge. Once it sets sail, we are on the hook. Mm-hmm. So once we authorize, okay, go, we have to pay no matter what. Mm-hmm. That's the risk with fireworks. That's the risk every town has with fireworks.
Yes, right.
Well, it sounds like the major risk with the barge is not rain, because if it's raining on July 4th, we're not going to have rain. I mean, no one's going to come out and be exposed to thunder or lightning or rain. The challenge, I think, is if there is significant wind or something that's going on that's making the water unsafe for the barge, but yet the land, people
will
come out. And that's the risk.
That is, I mean, it's a risk. The barge, I wasn't there for the 1 year, but.
For 20 years, I presume.
What, pardon me?
Glencoe lived with that risk for 20
years. Was it 20 years it was on the barge?
I don't know if it was that long.
I don't think it was that long. Because there was a point that it was shot off of
The North Beach.
The North Beach, but then the regulations totally changed with fireworks and every, you know, things like that happened. So that's when they moved to the barge. And I think it maybe was 10 years, but don't quote me, I do not have them. I would have to go back and dig in the files to find that history, because we weren't there then. But
yeah, I seem to recall that it was shot off over by the boathouse, and there was the fireworks coming onto the houses over there.
Yeah.
That created the safety issue. That's why we looked then to the barge.
Yeah, there was some issues.
And I don't remember that.
But you're right, it was.
Saturday this year, I am probably swayed to doing more risk averse as well. Look at the calendar, notice of July 4th. If it's a 1 year thing, I'd probably go the way. If we're talking about 5 years in the long term, I think July 3rd is probably a good idea, but I don't know exactly what we're voting on.
The leap year messes up the next couple of years, because 2021 goes to July 4th on a Sunday, and then 2022, July 4th on a Monday, which means that if you had it on the 3rd, that would be a Sunday.
Which is great, because no one has work on that Monday.
But you would have it on the, you'd have to go to work on the Thursday,
so the next 2 years is not a. The next 2 years, it's not a. No one's working the next day, right? 2020 and 2021, no one's working the next day.
Correct.
2022, people are working the next day.
And then it gets really funky in the year after that. So the 4th on a Tuesday. So then it would be, again, people will come home on the 3rd, not work the 4th, and go back to work on the 5th.
Yeah, that's it. I'm probably gonna shift over to keep it on the 4th, which I realize.
And that's okay.
Of a shift.
No, but you know,
I
would like to change your mind.
Yeah, so I. Because I have a choice, honestly.
Yes. Yes.
You do.
Yes,
I mean, do you hear public input? You hear.
But so the argument that we submitted this survey to the people, and the people have spoken, and they haven't said. As long as the 4th is on this day or something, as we've asked them for their opinion and they've given it to us, but you still think we should?
Yeah, I think I realize there's a 20% gap, but I'm the one that made that note. But I think it's one of those things where it's, this isn't life or death for us all, which is nice. But I think it's one of those things where a lot of the comments came out with the working the next day, and I can understand that as a working parent and a working wife.
But if you remember the comments in the survey,
we're also
beyond that.
Yeah.
I'd like to point out, which I appreciate, because the last board had the same mental dilemma. When you say the 20%, I just want to make it clear that the survey is not statistically accurate. You know,
well,
you have to understand that, just like any poll that they do for election, they always do that disclaimer. It's 10, probably 5 to 10, you know, there could be a 5 to 10 margin of error. So I just want to put that out there, but when you're doing it, you can't pull in.
I just want to make a point about referendums and polls in general.
Yeah.
We got elected to look at the facts and make the hard calls.
Yep.
It's really easy to click yes or no on the poll, knowing virtually nothing.
Right.
And there's a whole lot of people in the country across the Atlantic who are now trying to deal with the consequences.
Yeah.
Right.
True.
So
that's so true.
I'm not suggesting that the people that participated in the poll didn't do so with good intention, but they didn't have all the facts. And I think I would be more swayed if it was 90-10 than I am swayed at 55-45.
Correct. So what?
Good. We know a lot more than people who put that up.
So what I'm hearing is, although we of course wanted to get some sort of response from the community that would direct us, it wasn't overwhelming enough to defy the facts, the additional facts that are in front of us,
And I have one question. If we pass on the barge this year, is it your understanding that it may well be available another year, or that somebody else is going to grant? Okay.
No, they seem to think there'll be no problem. There isn't a lot of communities looking to do fireworks on the 3rd of July off a barge. You know, there's only so many communities that do them. So
it's an added expense that no community really wants to have. That well, that doesn't have to have it, so they
right.
They wouldn't have it.
Yeah, and what I picked up from the survey, it's so interesting what we all sort of pick out. I saw a lot of, there's no reason to spend the money. We don't have to. It's fine the way it is. So I really saw a lot of comments about additional expense and how that weighs in on it.
But I just want to point out that it's not just about the 3rd or the 4th. It's about beach access.
Yeah.
And many of these comments were that they want beach access.
Did you just say that? I had no idea about this. I've been holding a beach token for 7 years. I've lived here. Winnetka honors our beach passes,
yep.
Beach tokens.
Yep.
Yeah, I, as a board member, a newly elected board member, I have no idea.
We advertise it, and then we even get pieces of paper when people come up.
Yeah, that's a...
Here you go, right down there.
Yeah, so for the people that want to access a beach, it is there. Now, granted, you can't ride your bike there, and you can't walk there.
It's not
the
same. It's not that. Right. It's very close.
But yeah,
such a hard decision.
It's not an easy decision. I this is one where someone wins. So I'm going to, you know, I think from my perspective, being risk averse is probably the right way to go when it falls on a Saturday and we had a decision and it was on a Tuesday. I can see a different outcome.
Okay. So there we go. So I guess unless anyone else wants to change their position, we could vote, and then that
way,
see how it falls.
Do you want to change your motion, or do you just want to vote on this?
No, I think we vote on the motion as stated.
Okay, so the motion is stated. Can you repeat the motion, Jenny?
It's to
yes.
Hold on, 1 second.
Yeah, hang on.
All right, I think I got it. To approve the Independence Day fireworks for 2020 only.
For 2020, mm-hmm. No only.
To be barge fireworks on the 3rd of July.
So if you want them on the 4th of July, you'd vote no.
So roll call
okay.
Vote, please.
Okay, Commissioner Boren.
Yes.
Commissioner Covey.
No.
Commissioner Ludden.
No.
Commissioner Underdunk. President Brooks.
No.
All right.
So motion fails.
So July 4th fireworks.
Yes. And it is my expectation that we will revisit this for the following year if there's a,
maybe we can just do in our special project facilities, maybe look at, see if we want to make it more, a survey that has more options or not. We could discuss that. Josh?
No.
Okay. Got it.
Okay.
Thank you, Aaron, for conducting a survey.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Okay. I entertain a motion to approve of ordinance number 902, authorizing the sale of Linden House at 233 Linden Avenue lot as presented.
So moved.
Second.
Discussion.
Oh, you got that.
Per the citizen comments, does anyone feel we should take more time to allow more community input? Do we feel that people are not aware of it and we should give this more time? Or are you satisfied that the process has been adequate?
I'm sympathetic with the fact that sometimes the coffin may not internalize or go and look at public materials. Mm-hmm. But the facts are clear. We have been talking about and made this topic clear for well over a year. And I don't agree we should put this to a referendum for the same reason I just mentioned a few minutes ago. We studied all the facts and we think this is the right thing to do, and the voters elected us to make those decisions.
change the outcome. If I really felt it would change the outcome, I was going to take more time, but I know we took all the steps. I was at the village meeting when we discussed the parcel. I saw the sign. I drove by there. So I really don't feel it will change the outcome.
As far as I know, we only have one real objector. Is that right?
Yes, both at this meeting and actually when we had it at the meeting at the Village Hall, there was a large crowd there. We were expecting, but they were under this assumption that the whole parcel was being subdivided and townhouses would come. And once we said, oh no, it's just this house, they're like, oh, that's fine. And they all got up and left, and there was one person left.
Yeah.
And there's only been one person after the meeting. I said, if anybody wants to be notified of meetings, please let me know. I'll email you. One person asked to be notified, and I notified them of this meeting date.
That person is immediately adjacent.
Correct.
So unlike the 4th of July, I don't think that we have the same sort of decision-making dilemma in front of us. Okay. Michael, anything to add? All right. Roll call vote, please.
Commissioner Boren.
Yes.
Commissioner Covey.
Yes.
Commissioner Ludden.
Yes.
Commissioner Underdunk?
Yes.
President Brooks?
Yes. Motion passes. I entertain a motion to approve the lowest responsible bidder, Red Feather Painting Company of Glenview, Illinois, for base bid A1, A2, A3, A4, for a total of $134,000 as presented.
So moved.
Second.
Discussion.
Question for Chris. The low bidder is substantially lower than the
That's a good question.
What's the secret?
No, that's a good question. For the low bidder for the halfway house is actually the high bidder for the Sanford house.
Yeah.
So typically, you know, this is a sealed bid process, so we know that it's transparent and you know that there's no funny business going on. But when I saw that, I thought, you know, let's dig a little deeper into this. So I had a great meeting with the contractor where we really went through the bid specs, made sure that the individual understood what they were bidding on, that we didn't have a miss. They had great references, and you know they thought they could get the project done in a way that the other contractors didn't. I mean, the reality is they're a little bit of a smaller firm than something that's a little more a larger firm, so that they thought that gave them an edge. Beyond that, sometimes it just depends on what they have lined up for the fall. You know, there are times where bidders bid projects a little bit closer to margin just to keep their crews working, things like that. So I think this is a unique project. It's also a statement project for a contractor. It's the kind of thing that you want to put on your sales material, you know, versus just a roof, that kind of thing. So we do deal with contractors in particular trying to break into certain communities and bidding things in a certain way to try to do that. So I think it's a solid bid. I mean, they've indicated to me that they're ready to follow prevailing wage for the law. They understand the scope of the contract, and we have a performance bond, so the district and the taxpayers are protected, so I'm fine with it.
And the architect is comfortable with them as well?
You know, the architect at first thought, you know, we might have an issue, and I think that's why we went deep into discussing the scope, checking the references, making sure that this was a contractor who could actually execute this project. And, I mean, I think that $134,000 is still a lot of money. So, you know, for the size of that structure and what we're trying to accomplish. So, you know, I think if we were putting a roof on an 8,000 square foot house, this would be concerning. But just based on the size of the halfway house, I think this leaves us ample room to get the job done for the contractor to make a good profit.
If they're coming under the bid, that's okay too.
Yeah. Well, as you often say, you've seen the future, and the future is expensive. Under, which, you know, just based on the age of the structure, it's why we looked at kind of reserving the additional budget for contingencies just based on the fact that structure's coming up by 90 years, and, you know, we just don't know what we're going to find when we really open it up. So.
Good question, W.
Yeah, that was a great question.
Same thing I asked.
Same thing that went through everyone's head. But I also thought it was so interesting that it flipped for the other, but the total still. Okay. Very interesting. Anything else? Okay. Roll call vote, please.
Commissioner Warren?
Yes.
Commissioner Covey?
Yes.
Commissioner Ludden?
Yes.
Commissioner Underdunk?
Yes.
President Brooks?
Yes. Motion passes. Okay. Everybody has this folder. I don't know if you've gone through it. It's the minutes.
Yep.
Okay. So, would any commissioner like to discuss the minutes in closed session?
No.
Okay. Anyone? Mr. Dudley? Okay. I entertain a motion to approve and keep confidential executive session minutes, including April 2nd, 2019 and July 9th, 2019, as mandated by 5 ILCS 120/2, parentheses C, parentheses 21, as presented.
Okay.
Any discussion? Roll call vote, please.
Commissioner Bourne?
Yes.
Commissioner Covey?
Yes.
Commissioner Ludden?
Yes.
Commissioner Underdonk?
Yes.
President Brooks?
Yes, motion passes. Is there any other business?
No, and no executive session needed.
And no executive session, so I entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
So you get the
okay, motion.
I do get the yellow, the folders back, please.
The folders back.